Hey everyone, before you begin, there's some reverb on my mic this week. I changed the way we recorded, switched to some new software, and I thought that this had been resolved, but it didn't. So this week on my audio, it will sound like there's some reverb on my mic. Still completely listenable. Everything's clear. I hope you enjoy the episode, and we will be putting out more podcasts on the Patreon feed this week with better quality audio. So enjoy.
It's Rich Youngin. Bitch. Coach 41, nigga.
Hello.
Stupid ass nigga. Fuck. Ha. She wanna see how I live. So I'ma show up. Bitch, I got the bag. Like I'ma grow. The clip extended. You know it's showing.
We are back. No Fred this week. No Tom. This is a Sunday Puncher podcast. I'm Angelo. I'm your host. And I got here. He's been on the shelf for a while, but we thought we should dust him off this week. Tom's celebrating his birthday today. If you didn't tell him already, tell him on Twitter, happy birthday. Fred passed out somewhere probably. I'm not quite sure. So Lex, welcome back. Shout out to Rollins who suggested, hey, you should get Lex on the pod. He'd probably be good this week.
Brother, how goes it?
You know what? I'm pretty happy about what we saw this weekend. If you obviously were living under a rock and not paying attention to boxing this weekend, we had Jason Rosario in the main event. He upset Julian Williams, your boy, Julian Williams and Breadman. So what's your thoughts on this fight? You know, you walk out of this fight, we saw Jason Rosario. Nobody really thought that this guy was going to come in and pose a challenge. He's comes to Julian Williams' hometown and he knocks him out. I mean, you think Julian Williams is done?
I don't think Julian Williams is done, but I think 154 is looking very, very spicy. And if he wants to get back to the top, it's going to be a very challenging road. Not to say he can't do it. I'm a big fan, but 154 is every fight that we see more and more difficult. Rosario is real. Do not think this is a fluke. That man is real.
I predicted that Rosario would win this fight and that he would knock out Julian Williams. And for me, I've seen Rosario fight like up close and personal, live, ringside. I was there. I saw Rosario fight twice. And what popped out to me was that Rosario is a limited boxer. That much is true. I was there when he fought Jorge Cota. I was not impressed whatsoever in the guy's boxing ability. However, the power that I saw from this guy, I thought if he connects with guys, I don't know that he'll knock the top guys out, but he's going to make them honest, which is what we saw Julian Williams do to Jarrett Hurd really early in that fight. And then ultimately, Williams, you think Williams maybe just has a weak chin?
I don't want to call him chinny.
Can you put
but
all the way?
I do question his ability to focus. I think what people like, this is a unique take. I haven't heard anyone talk about, but I really want people to like look closely at this. When he fought Hurd, everyone felt was huge. Julian Williams was able to take the fire. But the one difference between Hurd, Charlo, and Rosario is Hurd isn't really a precise puncher. He kind of tries to drown you out with his size and physicality. And I think J-Rock was able to handle that. Rosario, although not the most clever boxer, he's a sharp counterpuncher. I challenge anyone listening to this to go back and watch Rosario versus Gallimore. Rosario almost knocked out Gallimore in like the first round with a mean counter shot. It was precise, on point, and it hurt him. And Gallimore is super tough. And I think when J-Rock was in the ring with those sharp counter punchers, or just sharp punchers in general, he gets mentally fatigued. I think I don't know if he can fight at that frequency.
You know, one of the things, and I don't want to go down that route of like, you know, all we bash Julian Williams' resume, but there's something to talk about with his resume, and that is that you look at his fight with Jarrett Hurd, and like that's the fight that people started to say, oh, well, you know, Julian Williams might be the top guy at 154 pounds, but like, if you really think about it, Jarrett Hurd for a long time, like Deontay Wilder is one of the most unique fighters in the sport in that Wilder is not the most skilled fighter, but over time he's won a ton of people over by just basically people just now have faith. It's like, okay, we get it. Wilder does not have to outbox guys. We're okay with that. But we're still, despite him not traditionally being a good boxer, not doing the things that most good boxers do, what Wilder does do is he knocks guys out. And that's a skill in and of itself. And it's to the point, to the level where it's like, now Wilder, you're the, one of the top guys at heavyweight. Well, I think Jarrett Hurd had a little bit of that going on, where Jarrett Hurd never was like that top fighter. You know, what did Jarrett Hurd have over other guys? He was big and physical and wore them down. But like, how many fights can you recall where Jarrett Hurd looked, I don't know, like he was getting outboxed, like he was on the verge of losing a fight? Look at the Tony Harrison fight. Look at the Austin Trout fight. Two guys who, you know, really took the fight to Hurd. And Julian Williams goes in there and beats him. And it's like, all right, well, you know, now Julian Williams is the top guy. But like, was Hurd ever as good as he was given credit for?
I think he ran off a streak of really impressive fights. And I mean, that's the beauty in boxing. Like, there's always going to be another guy. And like, the true great ones are able to like continue to win and win no matter who you throw at them. Like, obviously Floyd, or like Pacquiao, even though he's had his speed bumps. And Jarrett Hurd, he had a hot run. Like, Trout was great. Lara was great. Harrison was great. And J-Rod, he found a style that worked. And that's what I love 54. I've seen a couple of people here and there saying these guys are overrated. It's not a great division. They should do a tournament. Look, to me, it's my favorite division in boxing right now. I love Charlo personally. I don't know if he's the best guy. I have no clue. What if Rosario catches him clean? Does he stand up to it? I don't know. Or does Rosario beat Lara? I don't know. I mean, there's like 10 guys in that division who legitimately could do it, I think.
So, speaking about 154, like, I did see this out there, and we should discuss this. Like, do you think that the fact that Julian Williams goes in here, and look, Julian Williams, good amateur pedigree. When he beat Jarrett Hurd, there were those that weren't that shocked by the fact that he won. But given he just got beat up by a guy who was essentially like just some random guy ranked in the top 20 in Jason Rosario. I mean, on paper going in, you know, I had known about Rosario, but like that, for the majority of boxing fans, they weren't super familiar with Rosario. Do you think that 154 is possibly overrated, or is it just really deep in terms of guys who are talented?
It's deep. Every single fight, there's someone new. I mean, I don't think people are fully aware. Castano is hiding in the background somewhere right now, waiting, licking his chops for opportunity with these belts.
Patrick Teixeira.
No one's talking about Castano. That's your boy. I don't claim Teixeira.
I'm not claiming him either. Castano's going to claim his title.
Listen, guys, here's a jewel for those of you who don't know. Castano beat Errol in amateurs, and that's one of his like big claims. And like, I mean, this is a good fighter. Did he beat Usyk? Did he beat Sean Porter? Another one I'll throw out there. No, I don't. Personally, I don't think this division's overrated. I think it's the deepest, most difficult division in the sport right now.
No, I definitely think it's a deep division too. And like, part of the how does a division get deep? It's not just that. One thing specifically about divisions that are quote unquote deep is that you have to look at who's at that division. You know, you have to go back a few years, who's at the division and who's bringing a lot of money. Typically, the divisions that where there's a lot of money in them, that's the deep division. So like welterweight, for the longest time, we've had draws at welterweight. Well, guess what? That division tends to be really deep because people flock, because that's where the money is. Well, I think at 154, with Canelo hanging there for so long, Floyd occasionally fighting there, I think a lot of these guys, like, you know, they targeted 154, and this is like years and years in the making that the division would wind up being stacked the way it was. And like, was this intentional on PBC's part that they saw that this would come through, or is it something that they've created themselves? I don't know, but 154 is a division that they've invested for a while, and it's been pretty smart. It's worked. Top Rank has the same similar thing going on at 126, which they've had for years and years and years. Obviously, the money's not quite there like it is at 154 or 147, but it's interesting how these divisions wind up getting crazy like this.
Now, I have a question for you. I'd like to throw it at you, if you will.
Of course.
Do you think it was a mistake for PBC to delay Charlo versus Hurd, or delay Charlo versus Williams, or delay any of these so-called like 154 super fights? Or do you think this is great? I don't know.
So there's two ways to think about that. I don't think it was a mistake, first and foremost. But the counter argument is that, well, these guys lost out on what would have been bigger paydays. And the counter to that is, like, how much bigger would it have been? So, like, let's say that rather than doing the Charlo Harrison fight, they instead do Charlo Hurd. I don't think that fight was feasible at the time. And if you look at what's the difference in terms of, like, how much Charlo made and how much the fight made, what's the difference between Charlo Harrison that day and Charlo Hurd? Like, it's a marginal difference given that neither guy had really been built. That was when Charlo fought Harrison, that was the first fight on Fox. So I don't think it, like, it hurt them at all that they didn't do those fights. Like, not doing, what was the other one he said? Hurd and Charlo? I don't think it would have made any sense at the time to do it. Yes, they lost out on a payday, but, like, what's the percent difference? I bet it's not that big.
No, I agree totally. I ask because it's another thing I've been seeing around is it's so funny, man. Boxing fans are just never happy. Like, no. You have the best facing the best, literally. And now it's, oh, well, the PBC should not marinate. But if the PBC marinates, then it's why aren't the best fighting the best? And it's, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. I totally agree. You know, if they made those fights, the ones I mentioned earlier, I don't think the money would have been marginally different. And I think what's happening now is great because, like, say Rosario comes to New York, there's a huge Dominican population here. And say he runs off one or two wins, that's huge. I mean, you have a new star that could do pretty good at Barclays.
Rosario seems like the type of guy, like, he might be able to connect with fans. I don't know that for a fact, but it's possible. And I mean, you're absolutely right about the Dominican population out there in New York. I think one of the things boxing fans have is, like, there's this anxiety boxing fans get about fights, that if it doesn't happen immediately, the fight isn't the same. And it's like, possibly, but I don't really think so. Like, do you really think that Jarrett Hurd losing to Julian Williams affects how he's going to fight against Jermell Charlo? He's going to fight the same way. He's going to walk forward and eat shots and throw big shots. And either he's going to connect with Charlo and hurt him, or he's going to get outboxed up until the point where maybe he even gets stopped because he takes too much punishment. That fight is not going to be any different. Now, he fights this week, and one of the things we'll look at is if he looks like he's about to change course in his career in terms of the style that he employs. But history tells us that that's probably not going to happen. We've seen very few times when a fighter can actually change their style after a loss. But, you know, it's really just that boxing fans get in their heads about fights not happening at the right time. Who knows when the right time is?
I mean, it's hard to tell. A lot of people, Floyd versus Pacquiao should have happened when Floyd made the, what was it, like $40 million offer maybe?
It was something like that.
And then fast forward a couple of years and they probably both made over $100 million, which at the time of the $40 million offer sounded
like. I mean, look, like, you said it perfectly. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, look at Mayweather fighting Canelo. Like, there are people complaining that fight happened too soon. Okay, fine. Then I think history's going to tell us that maybe Canelo waited a little too late to fight Golovkin because Golovkin was at the end. Okay. I mean, you really can't win. Look at Charlo and Lubin. In the wake of that fight, there were so many people saying that was too soon for Lubin, that Lubin shouldn't have gotten that opportunity at that time. It wasn't the right time for him to fight Charlo. And given that he got knocked out in the first round, you have a really strong claim there. Although, is it true? I don't know. Should they have waited? The fight, no doubt, would have been bigger if they would have waited. If Erickson Lubin was, you know, 27-0 going to fight Jermell Charlo, who either had one loss or no losses at the time. Like, obviously, it would have been bigger. But, like, Do you want to say that he got rushed into that fight? I mean, he got there. He was the number one guy, the contender or whatever. The WBC ordered that fight. So it's a tough game to play when you look at timing of fights. There's literally never a perfect time for a fight to happen.
And ironic thing about you mentioned, if you look at all the three guys who faced Gallimore, Ruben Rosario and J-Rock, I want to say and lose a round to Gallimore.
No, he didn't, but it also wasn't a very fun fight to watch.
It wasn't, but not every fight's going to be fun. Sometimes you get in there and handle business, and I think Lubin did that. And I totally agree with you. It was like a meh-ish fight.
Yeah. And look, this adds to Lubin going forward. Like, Stu was... I'm going to credit him because he clearly wanted to, like, he's like, you heard it here first. He said, Lubin will get Rosario's belts. Which would be a crazy redemption story to go from knocked down the first one to Jermell Charlo to now picking up two of the belts at 154 and then rematching Jermell Charlo down the line. Like, would it have been worth that first round knockout early on to now have that rematch with three of the four titles on the line? That seems like a good storyline, or, you know.
You throw that storyline on Fox, all the trash talking, and a little face-off like the one that Charlo and Harrison had, and you let me know how those ratings do.
I mean, you three titles in the line, unification, I think it'd do well. So let's go back to talk about Julian Williams. If they execute or exercise their rematch clause, do you think it goes any differently?
It's such a tough call. Again, I watched the Gallimore fight earlier today. I was curious. And in my opinion, there is a way that J-Rock can fight Rosario and do better, but I don't. The way I like something about J-Rock's defense, I don't know if it's leaky or he lacks head movement, but it's like I don't know if he can come back immediately and beat Rosario even with the better game plan, because Rosario's counter punches are crisp and he hits hard. And a weird thing about it too is like I think J-Rock put himself in a very challenging position because him and Bregman were very critical on Jared Hurd for stepping away from the rematch clause because they needed more time to get better. Jared needed a new trainer. He needed to work on new wrinkles in his game. Now J-Rock is in a position where maybe some new wrinkles would help him. I'm not suggesting he needs a new trainer, but you know, maybe a fight in between a Rosario fight may help him. But all that trash talking, well, criticizing he was doing about Hurd, it's like if he doesn't take the immediate rematch, it's gonna I don't think it'll. I mean, who am I? I'm just, you know, I'm a podcaster, but I won't like that.
You know, I don't think the rematch goes any differently, and you know, I think you were pretty tame in your assessment of Julian Williams, and I think that was intentional. I don't think you want to really go at him, but I'll do it. I don't think J-Rock is, you know, I would put J-Rock amongst the top guys at 154, but there are certain styles that he's not going to do well against, and that's somebody who's willing to throw with him. I think J-Rock is kind of like a front runner when he gets out ahead in fights. Like, you know, he's really hard to stop. But over the course of his career, we've seen J-Rock get counterpunched. And I don't know if that's defense, probably the defense, but... One thing that we've seen is like, well, when he gets hit, he does tend to wobble. And his instincts when he was hurt weren't very good.
They were poor to be. Yeah, they were not very good at all. I mean, he tried to clinch. His clinch game wasn't, I mean, like, while hurt. And like before that uppercut, I think that's why the ref stopped it so soon. He showed no like no desire to defend himself, to move. He was just kind of standing there like a sitting duck. So.
Yeah, he doesn't take those shots well, and like, and the instincts he had when he was hurt. Like, I'll give him credit. He tried to stay on his feet. Okay, he stood on his feet, so I'll give him credit for that. But ultimately, like, he got rocked, didn't really respond well, and he was you know, he just couldn't defend himself. That's a bad combination when you're hurt and you're in there with a guy who, I mean. I wonder if Rosario, there's something Rosario did that I thought Jarrett Hurd was going to do with J-Rock, but he really didn't. But I don't know. Maybe J-Rock's weakness is guys who can fight at mid-range, because Jarrett Hurd obviously isn't a mid-range fighter. He's a guy that wants to be inside.
100%. I totally agree with you.
You think what PBC's done at 154 is better than a tournament? And if you're not familiar with like what they've done, basically, if you look, I think Rollins posted this on Twitter. They've literally just done a round robin between almost all of their guys at 154, where everyone's fought at least two or three of the top guys, and they're just all recycling, basically making it so everyone can fight each other. So it's similar to a tournament, except that once you lose, you get thrown back into the mix. It's not like, you know, one and done.
Listen, I'm not going to be so nice about tournaments. I absolutely despise tournaments in boxing, and I think anyone who encourages tournaments in boxing is a total weirdo. Listen, we've seen the World Boxing Super Series. It doesn't flow as it's supposed to be or advertised. The Super Six, which to me was the best tournament boxing has ever attempted, it broke apart after like four fights. Like everyone gets injured, drops out, the location switch, the date switch, it just becomes a big mess. And I don't think tournaments and boxing should be together. It just doesn't work.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say just what PBC is doing is perfect. You have a bunch of high profile guys that can draw in different parts of America. Like they're putting them where they deserve to be. Like J-Rock got a cool little Philly fight. Charlo could go to, I'm sure in Houston, he'd do really well. I prefer what PBC is doing by far.
Also, just if you really think about it, boxing does not like order and structure. Like boxing is a sport where things usually don't go to plan. You know, case in point, Adrian Broner was on the verge of pay-per-view stardom. Well, the guy winds up fighting Marcos Maidana, and we all saw how that went down. Jermell Charlo and Jarrett Hurd looked like they were going on a collision course for pay-per-view, and that didn't go according to plan. Anthony Joshua, to take over boxing, assert himself as the number one draw in boxing, and Andy Ruiz happened. Boxing doesn't like structure, and it, like, you know, I don't know, it's just the universe or whatever. And that's why tournaments are usually doomed. You know, the World Boxing Super Series has been plagued with problems, most of their own cause. But there's also things like, you know, the multiple guys who got injured in the bantamweight tournament that wound up seeing Nonito Donaire in the final, which, you know, it turned out to be a great fight, but it was a fight that didn't really determine who was the best guy at bantamweight. That wasn't the two best guys meeting at bantamweight whatsoever.
Not fight of the year, by the way. I'm saying it. You can at me. Not fight of the year. Sorry, guys.
Not fight of the year.
That's me saying that. Not everybody.
It's up there. It's up there. I didn't
fight,
pick it.
Good fight. Not fight of the year, though.
Sorry. I didn't pick it. I picked Spence Porter, but that was because I was also at that fight, which that was incredibly wild to be in that crowd. But yeah, I like what they're doing at 154. I'd like to see Top Rank do that at 130, and it looks like they're trying to with the rumors that Valdez is going to fight Burchelt. But like Top Rank has the guys at 130 and 126 coming up hopefully soon, that they got to do something like what is happening at 154, because these are the kind of things that really help. You know, you wind up, PBC's wound up with like eight really good fights, and I would love to see that with Top Rank at 130. And you know, whoever else has a vast stable. The only reason why I say Top Rank at 130 is because they're the only other entity that has a really deep pull at one stable. I can't really think of anybody else who has as deep of a stable as these two guys got. Obviously, maybe, PBC has 147.
Maybe DAZN at 160, wink wink.
That's if they were actually interested in giving Andrade a good fight, but apparently they're not interested in making that guy happy.
Or Triple G a good fight. I guess he's not scheduled the fight, says Mera, yet. So
that is a good point. That fight is not official yet, which is really weird.
I don't know what's going on at DAZN 160.
There's no way around that fight. It's mandatory. But the fact that it's not on paper yet, that's what are we, like a month and a half out? What was that date? Oh no, they just announced recently that they were pushing it.
Yeah, I haven't seen an official statement yet, so I don't know what to make of that.
No, but Andrade and Golovkin deserve to fight each other.
I mean, this is kind of off topic, but Andrade deserves to fight somebody in the table. I mean, the guy was, I'm pretty sure he was one of their first big signings, and he was supposed to fight Billy Joe. Billy Joe got caught using something illegal, and Billy Joe signs to Hearn and gets the Canelo fight ahead of Andrade.
Well, Oscar came out today and said that they're not even looking at Billy Joe.
Okay. I didn't see that statement.
Wink,
yet,
wink.
So.
Who knows?
Wink, wink.
Yeah. Real talk, and we're off topic, but who cares? Canelo fighting Saunders or Andrade next? What's the better fight?
You know what? We're in America, so I'm going to say boo-boo. I got to say boo-boo. Listen, UK listeners, I love you guys, but this is America. What goes on in the UK is what goes on in the UK. I have no opinion of it because I'm not from there. I don't know how it works, to be honest with you, but I know how America works. You match a black guy with a Mexican guy, and it's going to draw attention. Billy Joe was, like, good fighter, tough matchup, but I don't know if the American public is really going to be interested in his character. Now, is Boo Boo some, like, you know, he's not Charlo. He's not going to talk a whole bunch of trash or talk about he's going to knock Canelo out with the two hammers on his hands or whatever, but black and Mexico work. It's history has proven that matchup works in America. So I'm going to say boo-boo.
Didn't work that well for Canelo and Danny Jacobs. Those numbers weren't that good.
I mean, have we got numbers for Kovalev?
Nope. Silent. All quiet on that front.
Did we get numbers for, I'm blanking out. Who did Canelo fight before Jacobs?
Fielding? Nope. We didn't get numbers for that. Sorry.
So, I mean, like, yeah, I don't know.
I think that the tougher fight for Canelo is the Saunders fight. But the more I think about it, the more I actually want to watch the Andrade fight because Andrade has looked different literally every single fight. Like, he just does not look like the same fighter each time he comes out. And I don't know if that's ring rust. I don't know if he's bored. I don't know if he's just messing around because the level of opponents that he's been given just hasn't been very high. But, like, I think... I'm selling myself on that fight.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you about Boo Boo looking different. I think a big problem he faces is, like, he hasn't got the fights that he deserves probably based on his promotional situations. And I think his ring experience is far behind his talent. So he gets in the ring and, like, sometimes it looks amateurish. Sometimes he has moments of greatness. Sometimes he looks bad. And it's like he hasn't been developed the way other guys have. And, like, that's a big hurdle to face against Canelo, who is, like, he's by far the most seasoned fighter in the game, in my opinion. Every fight he's in, he looks amazing. Like, he's got his head movement is amazing. His combos are, like, he looks smoking. So, tough mountain, but I agree with you that, like, Boo Boo, again, is the one.
It's interesting because I would prefer to see that fight, but, like, just picking Andrade versus Golovkin, Andrade versus Canelo, I don't think I pick him to win either of those fights.
No, I pick to lose both. Well, like, Boo Boo versus Triple G is, like, more interesting because I think Triple G is, like, aging, but I probably still favor Triple G.
The reason why I like the Golovkin fight so much is that if Andrade fights the way he did coming up, I think Golovkin has no shot at beating him. But if he looks the way he's looked in his past few fights, like Golovkin, even who this faded and older Golovkin, is going to knock him out.
Don't forget, Golovkin is with Snack now. So
so is Andrade. So Snack on Snack.
Snack duel. And it's not even spelled right.
Okay, let's talk about Chris Colbert. He won a unanimous decision over Jezreel Corrales in what was, I thought, a pretty boring fight up until about the 10th round. And I don't know if I said it to you. I said it to somebody. I'm like, I was annoyed that Colbert didn't just put up his high guard and walk him down. Because I was like, that's what Floyd would have done. A young Floyd who faced a guy like this would have just said, I'm not going to try to outbox this guy like this anymore. I'm just going to rough him up and walk him down and see how he responds. And Colbert did that. He managed to get a knockdown and started to land some really clean shots on Corrales to basically... take Corrales completely out of the fight, even though he probably already was. Although the cards were closer than I thought they were going to be. I thought he was going to wind up winning 10-2, but that's not what the cards wound up being. So were you impressed by Colbert?
I love Chris Colbert. Like, fight by fight, he's slowly becoming my favorite prospect. I'd say it's between him of, like, guys at his level. I think, like, Ryan Garcia is, like, a little bit below. He's still building up his experience. And Tank is, like, a little bit past him. But, like, of that, like, on the cusp of getting a belt caliber of fighter, it's Tio and Chris Colbert. He's, to me, he's amazing. Like, I see so much potential in him. He just needs to, like, stay away from the distractions.
Do you know anything that maybe he does have some distractions going on, or is this just...
Listen, personally, like, I think Brooklyn fighters have, like, I don't know what it is about being from Brooklyn and being in boxing. Maybe, like, the gyms that they train in, but, like, they all hit a wall of, like, right before being really great, and then they just tumble downwards. Like, Zab had his, and he went downwards. Danny Jacobs couldn't make that jump. Mike Tyson couldn't make the jump of, like, ultra super top tier fighter. And, like, I'm really rooting for Chris Colbert. I see it all. Like, he's not afraid to, like, make it a fight. Like, a lot of the young fighters now, they kind of sit back and they're cool cruising to a decision. I think Joey Spencer was kind of guilty of that this weekend.
But Chris Colbert, I think Stephen Fulton is like that.
Stephen Fulton. I mean, a lot of the guys are like that. And, I hate to, like, bring it back to Floyd. But I think Floyd earned the right to do that because, like, he had to go to Floyd. Like, he was on the throne. These young guys still have to prove themselves. And, like, that's why I love Tio. Tio goes out there and he's trying to take your head off. And Colbert goes in there and he really wants to mix it up. His power is kind of lacking. But I think as he gets older, he'll learn how to sit down more. I mean, I saw moments where I thought that Chris was going to take Jezreel Corrales out of there. But, you know, Corrales is a pretty experienced and tough fighter. I think he's been stopped one time, right?
Yeah, by Machado.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I checked that earlier. And Machado was like 27 when they fought, I think. So, you know, credit to Jezreel. He's a tough and talented fighter. He knows how to make it ugly. But Chris Colbert, man, like, a kid's future is bright and he's a dog. If you watch closely, he has great temperament.
I like how you call it a dog and then talk about his temperament. No, I think he's, first and foremost, he's really smart. He does look like he... The adjustment he made in the 10th round was said everything you need to know because I haven't been sold on him. I really haven't. And the fact that he has a lack of power, to me, that's a big red flag, especially when you got a guy like Colbert. Because up until this point, I've seen Colbert fight before. And one of the things that I would remark about him is that he's an accurate puncher. He's a good counter puncher. And when those guys don't rack up a lot of knockouts early, it's a little concerning to me because I'm like, you're hitting guys clean. Well, why aren't they going anywhere? But to see that adjustment in the 10th round where he said, I'm just not going to outbox him. Because let's be real here. Jezreel Corrales was doing a really good job in this fight. A really good job at just not getting touched. Now, Corrales also wasn't throwing a ton. So Colbert didn't have to land too much to win the rounds. But Corrales did a great job, like, just being annoying in there. Like, he was tough to hit. And I really think that the Corrales from rounds 1 through 9, most of the guys at 130 are going to struggle with him. And I'll put even Gervonta in that mix. You can put Burchell, all these guys. They would struggle with that Corrales. Like, he made it impossible. The staying out of range, tying up at the right times. The dude was very good at being elusive in there. And, I mean, elusive is kind of hard to put it because it wasn't Floyd in there. It wasn't Purnell in there. But he was just like, you couldn't hit him. And that was by design. But it wasn't that he was wowing you with his, like, amazing head movement. Well, probably because he wasn't making Colbert pay. If he counterpunched a little more.
Listen, he's one of those guys that know how to make it. They make it as ugly as they can. And like, sometimes it's physically and, like, using their body. And sometimes it's not. He hugged a lot. I'm shocked that the ref didn't take away a couple points. But, I mean, he did what he had to do to make it ugly. Just it wasn't enough.
I think one of the things that that helped him get away with it is that it didn't look obvious that he was the one who was initiating it. Like, Joe Goosen on commentary didn't point it out until, like, the 7th or 8th round that Corrales kept holding. Because the ref, I think, was just like, these two dudes keep holding. And wasn't looking at either one of them as, like, the perpetrator of it. Not until later on in the fight when at that point it was clear, like, the fans were booing and everything that they needed to do something in there. And obviously, the holding was the reason why. Joe Goosen, he said that Colbert is the best prospect in boxing. Would you go that far?
I mean, it's such a lofty statement. I mean, how do you even quantify something like that? Like, who, like, am I mistaken in saying that? Like, that's such a tough thing to judge. Listen, I love Colbert. He's one of my favorites. But favorite and the best are two different things, especially coming from someone like Goosen, who's been in the game for a really long time.
Yeah, I don't. So prospects is like a tough thing. And like one of the first times once I started writing, I don't know if I was doing the podcast yet. I think I was just writing. Like someone brought me up on some random message board and they were like, oh, I can't take this guy serious anymore because he talked about this prospect. And the guy wound up getting knocked out. And I was like, hold on a second. You know, prospect, this is what happens to prospects. Most of them don't pan out. You know, you look at the Olympic classes, how many world champions do they produce? How many guys do they produce that not only win a world championship, but remain champion for a long time? It's a very small number. And there are tons of prospects like right now that probably won't pan out the way everyone envisions. You know, Joey Spencer and Vito Melnicki, there's a good chance that neither one of them wind up being world champions. Probably not Spencer.
If anyone out there was curious, Joey Spencer is this man's favorite fighter by far.
Oh my God. Everyone knows that that's not true. That's Tom. I'm not a fan of Joey Spencer. I've seen him fight in person, though. And one thing I will give him is that he's actually really fast. I didn't see that coming. But
I'm rooting for all these young guys. Like, personally, like, I like Joey. I think he'll be great on the Fox big stage in a couple of years and just keep improving and keep winning. A little off topic. Just saying.
Yeah. No, I mean, see, he fought on the card, so it's kind of on topic. So it's tough when you evaluate prospects. Like, Felix Verdejo looked amazing, and this guy looks like he's basically done already. And so it's hard to evaluate, but...
Let's look at, like, two opposite ends of the spectrum. Robeson Ramirez lost his first pro fight, correct?
Absolutely.
And he got knocked down by somebody that none of us know. He won two gold medals, right?
I think so.
One or two.
I mean, one's enough.
Well, he's a gold medalist.
He was a decorated Cuban amateur that was highly, highly decorated. There's no other way to put it.
Right. So that's one end of the spectrum. Lost his first fight. Let's take Deontay Wilder. This guy started boxing when he was 18 years old while he was delivering Budweiser's. And now he's on his way to his third pay-per-view.
Third pay-per-view?
That Bob Arum said will sell in 3 million buys.
Bob Arum is smoking crack. It won't even do over half a million.
Which would be great for Wilder. I'd be happy. But to get back to the point about prospects and Chris Colbert, it's hard to know. I mean, like, you have one guy that's a gold medalist getting knocked down in his first fight and losing to somebody we don't know. And Wilder, who can't box, as everyone says, but he's arguably the best heavyweight in the division. Him or Fury at this point, or AJ if
that's your thing. But you'd also be wrong. Right now, Fury's the best boxer in the division. Wilder is trying to make the case that he's the best all around. No, but even if Wilder knocks Fury out in the first round, he's still not a better boxer than Fury.
You know, listen, you want a hot take?
Sure.
Here's a hot take. Fury is 6'10", Paulie Malignaggi. and he weighs 40 more pounds than everybody.
He doesn't weigh 40 more pounds than Joshua. But that's not even a hot take. I think that's actually pretty appropriate. And if, like, you're somebody who's like, oh, but you only saw the end of Paulie. Paulie was very good in his prime. Like, you look at Paulie, he got to get to where Paulie got to without power says a lot about his boxing skill. Like, Paulie was super, like, pesky in there.
Listen, I like Paulie a lot. Good fighter. Great jab. Good defense. But, like, are we at, would I be like, he's the Floyd Mayweather, or like Bob Arum says, a furious Ali? I'm not going that far.
No, and neither should Bob. And if you add
30 more pounds of pound-for-pound weight to Wilder, it would be really ugly for Fury. And it still might be really ugly for Fury. But anyway, I don't want to go too much.
No, but as far as, like, is he the best prospect in boxing? I think there's a legitimate argument that you could make that it's Colbert right now. He's an interim champion now, though, and I typically stop counting you as a prospect once you get a title. And I would even include interim there. So I would say that Colbert has graduated, and he's, you can now look at him as one of the bright young title holders in the sport, to go along with Teofimo Lopez, Gervonta, even though Gervonta is already a multi-division champion. But I do think Colbert deserves to be in that conversation. And I think he is going to be included in those conversations along with Ryan Garcia, Gervonta Davis, and Teofimo Lopez as like the next crop of stars or future stars in the sport.
Okay, question before we jump to the next topic. Colbert won at least. Would he get blown out by Leo Santa Cruz at this point?
Oh, that's such a good question. Such a good question. Prospect. Okay, so I think Colbert beats him.
Wow. I didn't expect that.
I think Colbert beats him. I think Colbert is the nightmare style for Leo Santa Cruz. I mean, Carl Frampton beat him the first fight by basically matching him and doing a lot of what Leo already did and just being better at him in doing it. So he beat him to the punch a lot. And but one of the things we've never seen with Leo is someone who's going to try to outbox him and to be selective with his output and really just make life hell for Leo Santa Cruz. Like, we've never seen somebody in the ring frustrate Leo and walk around and circle on him. That hasn't happened. Leo Santa Cruz has been matched pretty well in his career. And granted, there's not like a ton of guys at 126 or 122 or even 118 where Leo, I think, first got his first title. There's not a ton of guys that can do that. And so I think Colbert would be a really interesting fight for him. I wouldn't be shocked if Leo Santa Cruz won that fight, though. I mean, we're talking about one of the best fighters in the world in Leo Santa Cruz and Chris Colbert, who's, you know, still wet behind the ears, breath smelling like Similac right out the womb. So I don't know. I think I'd take Colbert. What about you?
I love Colbert, but I always, like, I feel like experience in this sport is like a very underrated quality that people overlook in matchmaking and potential matches. So, you know, I'll give Leo the benefit of the doubt. You know, he's super experienced. He's been at the high level a whole bunch and knows what judges like. He knows how to deal with the pressure of, like, oh, maybe there's a superstar sitting ringside or, you know, the promotion. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but I would be rooting for Colbert in that fight.
All right.
I like Leo. He's like one of my favorite personalities outside of the boxing. He's always super gracious and kind, but like I love the way Colbert fights. Like, if everyone's always like, oh, the next Floyd this, the next Floyd that, of all the guys I've seen get that compared, Colbert actually looks like Floyd to me.
Are you sure it's not Tevin Farmer?
Don't get me started on Tevin Farmer, please.
All right.
Shout to Tevin Farmer. Good luck in your next fight, but don't get me started on Tevin Farmer.
All right. So you and I both know that Colbert is not getting Santa Cruz, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to give you a fight that is probably next for Colbert. Abner Morris.
Ooh, I didn't think about that. I like it.
You taking Colbert?
I don't,
you know, you talked all that about experience, so let's see you eat your words now.
That's another one, though, because, like, Abner's going to be rusty when he comes back. And I actually think I saw on Instagram or Twitter, he had a poll asking who should be next. And I think, like, I forget the options. It was like Tune-Up, Tank, maybe Leo, maybe Gary Russell. I totally forget. But if they made that fight, I'd be super excited. I would be rooting for Colbert. But again, like, this dude's experienced. I mean, how old is Abner? Like 30?
He's probably like maybe 33 now.
Yeah, like that's a lot of that. That's a grown man. Like I was amazed at the fact that like Joey Spencer and Vito Melnicki are like 18 and 19 year olds fighting 35 year olds. They're 35 year old scrubs. No disrespect to those guys, but they're just not elite fighters. Abner Morris is a 30 whatever year old elite fighter. And Colbert is like 22. He's still wet behind the ears, breath smelling like Similac. I don't know.
But Floyd was damn near 40 years old taking out your boy Canelo.
I mean, Floyd is special. The more and more I watch boxing post-Floyd, I realize how special he was. Like, I love Bud. Bud is great. But Floyd never got knocked down by a mean machine. No disrespect to Bud. I mean, we, you know.
Sounds like disrespect.
It happens. No, none. Because Bud did what he had to do. He got him out of there. But Like, he's not supposed to get knocked down by Mean Machine. Not supposed to, but it happens. Like, everyone has, like, off nights or off moments. How many off nights or moments has Floyd had? If anything, Maidana showed up, like, fighting a hell of a fight, and Floyd still managed to win in the first one. Or, like, Castillo showed up, hell of a fight, and Floyd still pulled it out and won an immediate rematch. Anyway, yeah.
No, I mean, I like that Morris fight. I think that's, and his poll said Gary Russell, Oscar Valdez, Tank, or Tune-Up.
I voted Tune-Up. I like Abner.
Your boy Chris replied. He said me.
Listen, sign me up. Sign me up.
See, I don't know what I'm doing wasting my time here. I should be a matchmaker. What'd you think of the Fox commentary?
Because another hot take, I think Fox has the best commentary crew, but when they bring Brian Kenny in, I'm not a fan.
Okay, now stay right there, okay? Because I'm with you. I cannot stand Brian Kenny. Anybody who follows me on Twitter knows I can't stand. I hate Brian Kenny. If I saw Brian Kenny in person, I would let him know. Okay, I would let him know. Now, I was talking to Fred, and we were like kind of game planning the podcast. And he's like, you know what? I hate that I'm about to say this, but I kind of get why they're going with Brian Kenny, and it makes sense. And I actually don't think I can argue against it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, look, I think Fox brought Brian Kenny on to make Lennox and Joe talk a little bit more because they can get quiet at times. And while Brian Kenny can be over the top sometimes, he gets these guys talking, and that's what they want.
You know, from that perspective, it makes a lot of sense. It's like, this past weekend, the Fox broadcast reminded me of like a Twitter troll talking to like real boxing people, and like the real boxing people putting the Twitter troll in their place. Because Brian Kenny had a lot of like strange, weird takes.
And he was Guzin pretty bad and on Lennox the FS1 were just part. Like,
what was your worst moment of Brian Kenny? Because I know mine.
And
I want to see if we agree.
The worst moment, I would go back to the Spencer interview. I thought that was a terrible interview.
No, I meant of this past weekend. I'm sorry.
Oh, this past weekend. Well, obviously it was when he was disagreeing with Steve Cunningham and Lennox, or no, Joe, and it was during the Cota fight. I can't remember what it was, but basically they were like, "You're disagreeing with us, okay." By the way, Steve Cunningham, I think, did pretty good on commentary. But what's yours?
Bring back Steve Cunningham. He did a great job. Shout out to Steve Cunningham. Anyway, my worst take was when he referenced, like, switching stances of, like, a midget weight fighter. Oh, I was just God. Like, please.
Well, yeah, he brought up Julio Cesar Martinez. It's like, okay, dude. Yeah.
Listen, listeners, I will never be down with referencing someone from those weight classes. Sorry, guys. I don't want to break any hearts out there, but it's not it. That was a bad comparison.
It's first of all, I would say it's a little pretentious because when you talk about switch hitters in boxing, you better bring up Terrence Crawford first.
How is that not the person you reference?
And secondly, if you want to go with like more of a historical, go with Andre Ward. Go with Miguel Cotto. Go with Oscar De La Hoya, guys who were known to switch hit from time to times. One of them in, never mind. But like, how you gonna bring up Julio Cesar Martinez?
It was like, what? Like, what are you talking about, bro? Like, that was I was really not feeling that. And the moment you referenced, I retweeted. That was like, your tweet was perfect. It's like, hey guys, don't listen to the two people who spent their whole entire career in the ring or ringside coaching people in the ring. Listen to Brian Kenny. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, Brian Kenny. You know, the dude who my problem with him is that he tries to incite debate. And I don't think that that's something you should be doing during a fight. I don't want to listen to a debate. I want to listen to the observations, things that I might be missing watching the fight. Like even HBO, when they got pretty bad towards the end, basically being a propaganda vehicle, they still discussed the fight. And you still got to hear Roy point things out and Lampley ask questions and then Roy would say like, no, this, you know, this is what I'm seeing so that you can. So like Lampley knew how to get Roy to say something about what he was watching that may not be obvious to the viewer who, you know, doesn't regularly study the game.
Yeah. I actually want to make a shout out to Martin from the patrons chat. All listeners, join the patrons chat. We get it popping in there. But anyway,
your enemy, Martin.
me and Martin had a heated debate about the Fox telecast. And I told him I love it because of what you just said. They're not trying to incite these spicy debates. They're trying to inform the viewer and giving them stuff that to make it easier for them to understand what's going on. And in a positive fashion, I don't really want to I don't need a lot of criticism. Like, the real world isn't like boxing Twitter. Sorry, guys. Like, people just want to sit down for an hour or two, relax and watch some television. They don't want to sit there and hear arguing. And that's what Brian Kenny is good at. And I think it sucks.
Well, yeah. I mean, and there's another part of this. Like, on one hand, it's like, well, I want, there's a fine line because there's like the debate, which we obviously don't like. And then there's the talking about the fight. But then there's also, you need a little bit more because sometimes not every fight is going to be that, you know, there's not that much going on. Like in the early rounds of the Colbert fight, if you're not going to, you know, praise these guys for their insane head movement, what are you going to talk about? And then there's the other side, which like, oh, do you want your commentary to be a propaganda vehicle? Like commentary is, at the end of the day, we're being critical, but I think I have an appreciation because I know it's a fine line to walk between being propaganda, you know, being boring and monotonous and just talking like robots, like they're, you know, about the technique and things like that. And then just like, debating, which is why I enjoy the Ray Mancini broadcast and I didn't at first. And I know you love Ray, but like Ray brings all of those. He brings a debate. He brings like legitimate joy and excitement over what he's watching. And then he also can bring insight in. Now, his insight, I think, is a little old-fashioned and a bit antiquated. But altogether, I think it is a good package for enjoyable fights. And FS1 is perfect for him because that dude will treat two guys with four losses fighting each other like it's Mayweather Pacquiao. He doesn't care.
Yeah, if Boom Boom did the Joey Spencer fight, you'd have thought it's fight of the year if you were just listening.
Oh, yeah. He would have loved that. I mean, dude, he would have loved the Williams Rosario fight.
Oh, he would have been screaming the whole time, literally.
Joe Goosen, by the way, if you listen closely, he actually does the screaming too. If you haven't noticed,
I've been noticed because like I always hear the. Listen, I love this. Get me so hyped. I'm at the crib and like jumping up and down. I get into it.
And all right.
By the way, real quick, the point I never thought about the point you made about Boom Boom being old and antiquated. And I actually think it's perfect because it's like, who doesn't have like an older uncle or grandfather that's old and antiquated, but you still love him dearly? To me, that's Boom Boom. It's like, you can't hate Uncle Joey. Like, come on. He's that guy. Boom Boom is my guy.
I guess is Boom Boom the equivalent of like Clyde on the Knicks broadcast?
Oh, 100,000%. I mean, Clyde is wearing suits from like that he probably dusted off out of the closet from 1980 for real.
He wore to the Superfly premiere?
No, he wore to his draft. But listen, you love Clyde. He's the OG. You can't.
I don't, because I'm not a Knicks fan, but I get it.
So no, we need more Boom Booms in the world. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. On the top ranked card, Eleider Alvarez, he got himself back in the winning column with a knockout over Michael Seals. This was like a scheduled knockout. You know, there are scheduled wins, and this was a scheduled win. Michael Seals, you know, guy's old. He'd been knocked out by lesser fighters than Eleider Alvarez. Definitely was brought in to basically get Eleider Alvarez to his next fight. So, like, what do you think should be next for Alvarez?
Well, I could have swore I read that the winner of that fight would fight Joe Smith Jr. Maybe I had that wrong.
I don't know.
Did you hear that or no?
I did not, but I would not be shocked. I just Googled it. Yeah, they're like looking forward to fighting each other. Because the WBO is gonna strip Gilberto Ramirez.
Good old WBO.
So, you know, obviously they're stripping Ramirez because, you know, he's having problems with Top Rank. So now it would be between Eleider Alvarez and Joe Smith Jr. And I think that's perfect for Alvarez because, like, I mean, I think Alvarez, only has a few more fights left in him where he's going to be worth much. Because, like, you got to remember, like, this dude was a prospect at 32 years old. You know, he...
Yeah, I was going to say, he's a bit older, isn't he? He's, like, maybe 37.
Is that 35?
Like that. He's kind of up there.
Yeah, he's 35 years old. But, like, at 32 years old, he had still never fought anybody. And at that point, he also wasn't very impressive in any of his fights. You know, he never had a fight where you're like, damn, this dude looks legit. He was just a prospect that got talked about because he had a good record, but didn't necessarily have any notable wins.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you a question that I think flowed into what we're going to talk about with Eliter. And the question is, can you name a more inconsistent fighter than Eliter Alvarez?
Wow.
Maybe tough off the top of the head. Or...
Yeah, if I had time to prepare, I'd probably be able to answer this better. But there are Danny Jacobs on a different level. I think Danny Jacobs is wildly inconsistent. Now, similarly to Alvarez, only, well, actually, Jacobs has three losses now, but only loses against guys that are pretty good. But ultimately, even despite winning, you know, most of his fights, he still doesn't always look like the guy he looks like when he's fighting the top guys. I mean, Jacobs looked really good against Golovkin. The Luis Arias fight was highly disappointing. He looked pretty bad against Sulecki. Was it Sulecki? No.
Yes.
Sulecki?
No, I thought it was.
Maybe. But I know he didn't look very good against Arias. I know he didn't look very good against Derevianchenko. Danny Jacobs is pretty up and down as a fighter. I like Danny Jacobs. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not trying to hate on him or anything. But I think, yeah, it was Sulecki. But he does look really inconsistent from fight to fight.
No, very talented fighter. But excluding Quillen, I don't think he's ever, like, had a, like, oh my God performance. Like, that's one way I rank, not rank, but, like, judge fighters. Is like, how many times can I leave your fight? I'm like, wow. Like, he completely blasted that dude. Or he completely, like, totally outclassed him. Jacobs, like, he can't reach that level. Even against what's my man's name that does the zone broadcast?
Sergio Mora.
Sergio Mora. He got knocked down against Sergio Mora.
Yeah, that was wild.
Like, that's not supposed to happen. Shout to Sergio Mora.
No, that was on the Garcia Molinaggi undercard, or was it Garcia? Yeah, it was Garcia Molinaggi undercard. I remember watching that fight. I don't even remember how the second fight went. All I remember is the first fight.
No, I think Danny Jacobs won by it was a, if I remember correctly.
He stopped them both times.
Yeah, but the second one was like, it was just meh, if I remember correctly.
I'm looking at the box rack for that fight. I remember this one too. This was on the Easter Comey undercard, and it's crazy. Eric Spring was on this undercard too. So like, Eric Spring's been in the mix on PBC cards in the past. Oh yeah, it makes sense. He's with Marshall Kaufman. That's what's his name? Travis Kaufman's dad, who promotes some of the Philadelphia PBC cards. Damn, all comes together.
See, PBC, bringing it full circle. But wait, so Alvarez. I saw I got it off track a little bit.
That's all right.
But no, yeah. So going back to what I said, Alvarez is highly inconsistent. If he fights Joe Smith Jr., I have no idea what will happen. I mean, Joe Smith Jr. was having trouble with Bivol. Bivol was making it look pretty easy, and I think he caught Bivol pretty good in the 12th round.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Towards the end of the fight, yeah.
His power is legit. He may not be the best boxer, but, you know, you like Deontay said, you just got to be right for 1 second. And Joe Smith Jr. has that kind of power.
Yeah, I think if Alvarez gets caught, like, it will come unraveled.
For sure. And he's a bit older. And, you know, like, as you get older, that punch resistance, like, fades, I believe.
Well, I don't think that he could withstand, like, the pressure that Joe Smith Jr. is going to bring. Like, you look at the guys that Alvarez has fought. He's never fought a guy that's going to be relentless on him the way Joe Smith Jr. would be. So, like, I think that would be a really good fight between those two guys. You know, we wrote Joe Smith Jr. off prior to his fight with Jesse Hart. But I think he's shown, like, that dude is durable.
Nice. He's durable, and he has that, like, I'm going to hunt you down no matter what quality to him. I mean, like, to hurt a fighter in the 12th round when you're down like
11-9-0
or 11, yeah, it takes a certain amount of like mental fortitude, and Joe Smith Jr. has it. So if Alvarez is like shaky during that fight, like it could get ugly.
I could see him losing a decision even because he might not be active enough for Joe Smith.
Yeah, I'll take the I would love to take a put 100 on that one. Joe Smith via decision against Alvarez. That'll be probably
crazy.
Plus 1,200 or something like that.
You're crazy. That I wouldn't do that. Maybe a knockout, but I would not take him. I would not bet serious money on a decision. All right. Antonio Brown, you've heard about this Antonio Brown stuff. For those of you who don't know, because I think it's worth, you may only know that he's potentially going to fight, what's the dude's name? Jake Paul?
Logan? Jake or Logan Paul, one of the two.
But this Antonio Brown stuff has like been going on for a while. So like Antonio Brown has been kind of like a head case for over a year now in the NFL. I think, was it last season, the season before, this dude got like in big trouble because he put the halftime, like during halftime, this dude was live streaming on Snapchat, the locker room during a game. And so he got in trouble with that, was critical of his quarterback in Pittsburgh. So they had to trade him. He goes to Oakland. He like causes all this controversy about the helmet that they wouldn't let him wear. I mean, it was to the point where Antonio Brown, like, all he had to do was, like, stop talking, and his contract was going to get guaranteed for $30 million. Well, the dude couldn't stop talking, and they cut him. I believe that's what happened. They cut him, so that guaranteed money was gone. He signs with the Patriots. This whole sexual harassment thing comes out. The texts come out. Patriots have to cut him, too. And he's just been off the rails since then. And now we're hearing that he's potentially going to fight a YouTuber. So my question is, he just also recently got dropped by his agent. His agent said Antonio needs help. And when he seeks help, he can come back. But otherwise, I won't represent him until he gets help. So how likely is it, do you think, that Antonio Brown actually gets in the ring and fights? And do you think that he should be allowed to? You know, given their CTE and all this stuff from being in the NFL.
I thought it was one big joke until I saw that his agent dropped him. I think his agent dropped him because he signed to fight. If you know, like, I'm a super big sports fan, and if I'm representing a client that wants the celebrity box and that client gets knocked unconscious, that looks horrible for your portfolio. I wouldn't want a client to do that, and that, in my eyes, solidified that the fight will happen. Should he be fighting? Absolutely not. I think it's kind of like weird that DAZN, like, you know, I don't want to get too like here, but I think Antonio Brown, he needs help. He's crazy. I mean, the video that came out of him yelling at his girlfriend wasn't a good look. The whole thing that's happened with all the Patriots helmet, none of it's been good. This guy needs like, he needs to throw his phone away, throw away Instagram, throw away Twitter, and like go tour Europe or something like that and just clear his mind. Go to Africa. I don't know. Whatever you need to get your mind right, do it. I think that DAZN throwing him in there with Logan Paul is horrible. Because if he gets knocked out, how is he going to bounce back from that? If the guy wants to play football, how?
Well, he's messed up in the head, he's got some mental illness and he gets knocked out.
Maybe he's depressed. Maybe he's bipolar and he gets knocked out. And listen, guys, I'm picking Logan Paul if that fight happens. He's been in two of these stupid fights already. He's not going to be freaked out. He knows how to train. Who knows if they test? Who knows what the weight classes are?
Oh, they clearly don't test.
I don't know if anyone's seen AB's social media post of him boxing. He looked super stiff. He had no head movement. He didn't look fluid at all. I mean, he's a great football player, great athlete on the field, but his boxing is different. What is he going to be, another Seth Mitchell? I don't want that one.
I know. How many football players have we seen try boxing unsuccessfully?
Plenty, all of them. It never works. And like as big a joke as Logan Paul is, he's done it before. He will not get nervous in the ring. He won't get uncomfortable. He knows that he's been through it. Antonio Brown's just gonna go out there and get knocked out. And what happens if he gets hurt? He bangs his head on the canvas, and DAZN has to live with that. I think it's a horrible look.
No, and I think that's why, for me, just looking at all those who are involved in facilitating and putting together this fight, it's completely desperate. It's actually sad. I don't know what's actually more sad, the fact that they would want to put this fight on, or the fact that Antonio Brown is at the state that he's in. Because, like, really, if you don't watch the NFL, like, Antonio Brown is probably one of the most talented wide receivers that has ever lived. You know, he's on a very short list of some of the top guys to have ever done what he's done. And at the same time, though, I said all that, and I agree with everything you said, but I can put all of that aside, and I'll say that I actually like it. And it, like, look, it's sickening what I'm about to say. I understand if you're a compassionate individual who cares about others and the well-being and the health of other people, you're not gonna like what I'm about to say. But this right here, this is boxing. This is what boxing does. This is prize fighting. At the end of the day, whether it's somebody who's dealing with the stuff that Antonio Brown is dealing with, or it's two guys who are very good at boxing, it is about the two guys that people care about, that people want to see in the ring beating each other up. That's what this sport comes down to. And we've seen freak shows before. We saw Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, which we all knew was a complete mismatch, but it was a mismatch that you couldn't take your eyes off of. And so this is clever. Like, if you're talking about how do we maximize, like, people watching a fight? Well, this is it. I always said, like, what do I want to see Floyd Mayweather do next? I want to see him fight Tom Brady, because I know that would do like 10 million buys. There would be so many people who would pay to watch Floyd Mayweather fight Tom Brady. Now, Tom Brady hasn't done any of the stuff that Antonio Brown has done, and that adds a layer of complexity to this situation. I don't think Antonio Brown should be allowed in a boxing ring. I don't think this fight should even be entertained. And frankly, at this point, I don't think Antonio Brown should be given a platform to have any of his opinions or his views voiced to any for anybody to hear, because he's clearly dealing with something. But at the same time, I can take that off, or I can put my promoter hat on and say, this is clever. I would do this too, probably.
Okay, so, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the people at DAZN probably love this from a perspective of raising brand awareness. But you think the raise they get in brand awareness, if they put this fight together, will be worth the potential backlash they'll receive for putting on such a goofy fight, and AB gets hurt or knocked out?
I would say no. And the reason why is I think that they would be, first of all, secondary to the event, meaning they're not ESPN. When the event's over, nobody's going to talk about them. And I think, secondly, the news cycle moves so fast that we'll stop talking about this in a week. So that's why I think it's okay to do it, because how long will you face negative repercussions of giving this a platform? And I think for them, like, it's not sustainable. Like, I guess an example is, like, if you do Google ads, for the most part, you'll get a small incremental boost in traffic on your website, but it's pretty hard to sustain it. And I feel like a fight with Antonio Brown, it's hard to sustain, because people who come for this, they don't see anything else like this on the schedule. So they dip. If they don't like it, they dip. They're not here for boxing. They don't want to see, you know, Scott Quigg and Jonah Carroll. They just cancel. So, like, these are short-term little steroid shots, but ultimately they have no long-term benefit.
No, I totally agree. I think it's tough because, like, you're pulling fans from, like, all over the place. Like, okay, so DAZN came into the American marketplace saying pay-per-view is dead and DAZN is the home for boxing. Okay, cool. If I'm a boxing fan, let's do it. Let's see. Put it to the test. Then you bring in YouTubers who, like, specialize in, like, FIFA and, like, battle rap beef, I guess. Like, I'm not even sure what, like, Logan Paul's, like, big, like, his biggest, like, thing would be, because he does a lot of stuff. But, okay, so you got the YouTuber audience. Cool. Then you bring in, like, Antonio Brown to box, and it's like, okay, so, like, what are they really doing? What's, like, the aim? Do they even know? I don't know.
That's why I think it's just like these little short-term gains. Like, What can we do that's going to sustain us this month? How can we cause a spike this month? And yeah, and I think it's a moving target because they're trying to pick up whatever they can. And this month it's Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown wants to fight. Okay, well, this seems like perfect. We've fallen into this.
Okay, I got another question. This is an easier one. Could Top Rank or PBC get away with this fight?
No.
I'd love to see Aram promoting this.
I mean, Aram would talk so much trash about this until he's promoting it. But I don't know. Aram, I think, has way too much respect for the sport. I mean, this dude promoted Muhammad Ali. He promoted some of the greatest fights of all time. I think Aram does have like this innate respect for the sport, and he wouldn't do something like that. And I think PBC's, I think that they know their lane and they know what they specialize in. And it's certainly not, you know, promoting these sideshow type of events. And granted, boxing itself is a sideshow, but I think this requires a certain level of like, I don't know. You think about it, like, would HBO have put a fight on like this?
Absolutely.
And I'm, you know, Showtime wouldn't. And like, this is different from Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. Like, this is two top combat sports guys, you know, and even seeing how the fight played out, Conor didn't look completely clueless in there. You know, Conor didn't, you know, you could say that Julian Williams got a worse beating this weekend than Conor McGregor did. Conor McGregor got a bunch of sustained punishment, but Floyd wasn't in there trying to, you know, take his head off.
Listen, you want a funny one? Another one? Would Conor beat Joey Spencer?
No. No, he wouldn't beat Joey Spencer. What are you talking about? Would Conor beat Logan Paul? How about that?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You think so? I would pay for that.
That would be... It's a shame Conor didn't call him out after beating Cowboy.
You know why? Because ESPN would not broadcast this.
You don't think ESPN and DAZN could do a joint pay-per-view? That's what
the people want, I don't think so. Right? I don't think so. The thing I wonder about is like if you know the NFL streaming rights, if their intention is to get in on the NFL, like Antonio Brown is basically barred from the NFL at this point. How is it going to work when the NFL owners look at this platform and say, oh, you guys are airing Antonio Brown fighting in the ring? Like, come on. I feel like this doesn't help their case in, you know, giving a platform to Antonio Brown, who's got sexual assault allegations and a plethora of other things going on between him and the league. I mean, he wanted to just, like, rant about the league in general. I don't know. This is probably like, I can't even think of anything that compares to this in boxing.
I can't. I mean, like you mentioned earlier, Floyd and Conor was kind of its own thing. It made a ridiculous amount of money. I mean, I'm still amazed at how they sold out the press conferences before the fight, the four or five locations they did. But like, besides that, I mean, I guess Ali fought the wrestler back in the day. Maybe that was in like this,
but that was an 60s. Exhibition. It was like a blatant exhibition,
right? And that, but that's my point. Like, you have to go back that far to even kind of compare, and it's not even a good comparison.
And so we've had exhibitions before, you know.
I guess maybe like, well, I don't know if you remember this, but in the 90s, MTV, you know, like when they used to, it was like Rockin' Jock, I think they had Sticky Fingers box someone from Green Day, I think, and like the guy from Green. That's probably the most comparable thing. You guys may want to YouTube that, but like, I mean, like, listen to these references we're throwing out. This is not very common.
I'm trying to Google it, and I don't see anything. Maybe you got it wrong or something. The guy is wrong.
I remember because 50 Cent dissed Sticky Fingers about this in How to Rob. Sticky Fingers fights. Pull this up.
Anyway, we can move on from that. So we talked a little bit about Canelo's next fight, but in your opinion, who are you confident in that he's going to fight next? Like, if you had to pick who Canelo was going to fight next, who are you going with?
Canelo is in such a weird position. Like, this is something I'm thinking about for, like, the past couple of weeks. Like, what do you do if you're Canelo? Like his fights have gradually, and from an outsider's perspective, been losing buzz. I mean, they waited for the UFC to finish the BMF fight before the Kovalev fight, and the tendons didn't look that strong. The Jacobs, like the buzz of the Jacobs fight was okay, but not like Triple G or fights before Triple G. So yeah, I don't know. Does he fight Billy Joe? That I don't think that gets the buzz he wants. Does he fight Cullum Smith? I think that's comparable. Billy Joe and Cullum Smith, it doesn't do it really. Does he fight Boo Boo? I don't think he wants to fight Boo Boo stylistically. I don't think it'd make for a pleasing fight. So like I'm not too confident in any of the picks. Like I almost feel bad for Canelo. Like I don't, because he's getting handsomely, but like what does he do? Are you confident in any of his potential picks?
No. I'm starting to sell myself on Canelo Saunders being next.
Yeah, if I had to pick, I would assume that's next just from like the early talks, but like I mean like that's really not buzzworthy. Like I
it's
mean,
not, like, but who is talk about what could they do that's buzzworthy?
I mean, obviously, like Triple G and Canelo, that gets some buzz. It's a little like past its due date, but at least it's like sellable. But the rest of the DAZN guys, if I was on Golden Boy, I'd be like, ugh, like what? Who do we fight? Like, I don't know. I have no, I mean, like, you know, in an ideal world, like Charlo would be fantastic, but like, good luck getting Charlo over to DAZN. Like, it sounds like someone told me the other day that Derevyanchenko was made like they raised him in the WBC rankings, I think. So there's some speculation that
I like Charlo that little conspiracy next, theory,
which would be great. And even if it wasn't Derevyanchenko, you still have Eubanks. And there's someone else at 160 that I wouldn't mind seeing Charlo fight on the PBC side. So like I have no idea what Golden Boy does. They're in a really tough spot in my opinion.
Well, and also, Golden Boy has no control over Canelo at this point. It's really up to who Canelo wants to fight. And I don't know that he's, like, totally sold on any of the options out there. And that's why I think it's probably going to be Saunders, because it's the easiest fight to make. And I think Canelo fighting these matchroom guys means that maybe money, they can spend extra money on an opponent because Matchroom's going to front it. Whereas Golden Boy doesn't really want to pay too much for Canelo's opponents, which was the big holdup with the Kovalev fight.
Yeah, I mean, the Kovalev fight, listen, I went out to watch that. And it was like as soon as the UFC fight ended, like people completely tuned out. I was at a really nice bar watching it. It's just, again, I'll say it again. They're in a tough spot. I feel bad for Canelo. Like he's lost so he's stuck on the app. They've made all access kind of episodes for these Logan Paul fights that get big push, but Canelo doesn't get that push. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think Canelo should be on pay-per-view, but it's just not feasible at the moment.
No, I mean, Canelo's the only one with potential to do a 1 million buy pay-per-view at this point. Wilder's got some time to get there. Spence has some time before he can even reach that point. And, you know, those 1 million buy pay-per-views really add something to the sport. They become huge events that everyone profits off of, basically, with all the extra attention that comes the sport's way. And right now, we're not getting that. But anyway, let's move on to the previews before we wrap it up here. Danny Garcia returns against Ivan Redkak. This will be on Showtime. And this was supposed to be Danny Garcia's pay-per-view against Spence. But obviously, Spence got into a car accident, which has thrown a wrench into all of this.
It's depressing. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's depressing thinking about the fact that we should be getting Danny Garcia versus Errol Spence. Like, I wanted that one bad.
Yeah, and that what would have been interesting about that fight is, like, Danny's the same size as Spence. Like, I wonder what Spence does with the guy who's just as big. But also, Danny's, like, he's deceptively, like, big. Like, he's a thick guy. Like, I could see Danny Garcia at 154. And this is something that I didn't think until I actually was up close and I saw him at a fight. And I was like, whoa, Danny Garcia is actually pretty big. And then seeing him actually fight Adrian Granados, I was like, Okay, Danny's a really, like, underrated big guy for welterweight, obviously. He's, you know, he's not 6'4". I'm not going that far. But for welterweight, he is a bigger guy.
Absolutely. I mean, like, there was all these people trying to, like, poo-poo on the fight. And I'm just like, how? Who is, first of all, who's walked through Danny Garcia? I mean, it's the same thing that happened with Sean Porter versus Errol. You know, all these people, oh, this is a stupid fight. It's a mismatch. Why is Errol Spence wasting our time with this dumb fight? And it's like the most deserving fight of the year that didn't get fight of the year. I mean, like, you have all these, oh, I went the old school back. You had an old school fight, a fight that you had no idea who was going to win until that 11th round knockdown. It was the 11th round, if I'm right?
11th, yep.
Okay, so the 11th round knockdown probably sealed the fight for Spence. But I ask anyone who hates on Danny Garcia, who has walked through Danny Garcia and who has stood up to a crisp Danny Garcia hook? And, like, on the Errol side of things, I love Errol. But, like, has he shown the most incredible defense? I think some people think his defense sucks. So what happens if Danny hits him with one of those no-look hook counters? What happens? Does Errol stand up to it? Can you confidently say that he might not get dropped by a no-look hook counter? I can't.
I think that's fair. And I think that's the selling point of that fight, which was like, okay, Porter was a good activity fighter, and he gave Spence everything that he could handle, and Spence just barely got through with the win. Now Danny Garcia is going to hit him with power, and he's going to hit him with timing. And can Spence withstand that? Which would be the next test in, you know, Spence's career. But now we're not going to get that, and so now he's fighting Ivor Bredkak, which, you know, is it a good fight? It's okay. You know, it's not completely egregious. He's not fighting some random, you know, domestic Bulgarian guy who's got 13 wins. You could definitely do worse, but it's also not great. But given that what happened with Spence and this threw all their plans, this is what I think happened. Danny Garcia and Spence was planned, and all the other guys had their fights lined up. And then Spence gets into the accident, and they say, okay, do we reshuffle everything and basically stop building to what we were building towards, or do we just give Danny someone else and let everything else keep going down the natural path? And I think they chose to say, okay, we'll keep everybody fighting the guys who they're supposed to, let them keep building towards what we're heading toward, and Danny's just going to have to get an interim fight in the meantime while he waits for either Spence or Pacquiao.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, like, putting together a couple of things, I watched a couple Angel Garcia interviews after the J-Rock fight, and he kind of criticized J-Rock's team for choosing such a difficult first title defense fight. And, like, listening to Angel, I think he's very involved with the matchmaking for Danny, and I think he's aware that, look, we either have a Pacquiao or Errol Spence fight ahead of us. I'm not messing around with the Sean or Keith or Ugas, who's a tough, tough fight. We're going to take someone who, you know, will try their hardest and probably get knocked out in the process. And then we'll revisit this pay-per-view thing and try to knock out either a legend or someone that's supposed to be a legend and make a shitload of money doing it. Excuse me for cursing.
You know, one fight that I think that, and you know, you brought up Angel in the matchmaking, and look, I think you and I would make the same decision, and you listening would also make the same decision. But Danny Garcia versus Jose Cito Lopez would have been an interesting fight, because I think Lopez is way better than people give him credit for. And I think that dude would have tagged Danny a lot. I think that's one of those fights that Danny would not have looked good in. Danny may have gotten the knockout, but he wouldn't have looked great on the way towards his knockout. But Jose Cito Lopez would have been a really good fight here. I think Lopez is going to get built towards maybe like a Jamal James or something like that, where he can headline another card. But, you know, I think that would have been a good option too. But I get why they're going this route. It's very clear that Danny's next fight is going to be something pretty big.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like...
It might even be Spence next.
I think Angel said it in one of the videos I watched. He said, just send us the contract immediately after the fight and it's done. And I kind of think he said that in reference to Spence's accident. like maybe there was a verbal agreement for them to fight, but it wasn't in ink. And I think Angel may be a little upset that the bag was blown in that Errol Spence accident. So he wants to like lock things down and like get that Pac-Man or that Spence fight locked in. And if you think it's, I'm curious actually, because you said you think it'll be Spence. So then what happens with Pac-Man? Does he get that McGregor fight?
Yeah, I do.
Oh my goodness. And shout to Sean Gibbons. I see Sean Gibbons out there on social media promoting the fight in the New Vegas arena. Is that the location?
It for sure would be. I don't know that they do the new football stadium though, because I think you can charge a lot more. Well, actually, I don't know. A Vegas football stadium could do an insane gate if they price it properly. But I think it's more likely that McGregor fights Pacquiao than it is that he fights Floyd. And like that's not going to do 4 million pay-per-view buys, but it might do 2, and 2 is good enough.
2 is phenomenal.
Now, here's the one thing, though, okay? Here's the one thing, and this is the counterpoint, and anybody who brings it up, whether it be me, whether it be some other person, if they want to bring up the possibility of McGregor fighting Pacquiao, I'm going to tell you why I'm wrong in what I said and why anyone else who repeats what I said is wrong. The UFC has a deal with ESPN where basically ESPN pays a flat fee for pay-per-view, and therefore ESPN gets most of the pay-per-view money. So there's no, there's really no incentive for them to do pay-per-view for McGregor other than ESPN pushing for it. So is ESPN willing to split with Fox or Showtime to do a joint pay-per-view with the Mayweather-McGregor thing? I don't know that they would be down for it. It's not the same deal that they have with boxing. And the UFC really doesn't get to bear any of the fruits of that labor. So if McGregor's going to box again, I think it might be Floyd. But like I think Pacquiao. And I think that it's unlikely, but they probably could come together and work it out for that fight. And this comes after us saying ESPN wouldn't air a fight like the Antonio Brown. And obviously this is different, but like it would be fun to see ESPN get in on the freak show stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like the money would be good. So the Zone AB Logan Paul money is not what Pacquiao versus McGregor would be. Like that's big money. So
if Danny gets Spence, you think Pacquiao fights who next?
Not Sean Porter. I mean, I don't know. It's so weird. Like, it's almost a shame that it's two things. That Keith is always so injured and that Terrence Crawford stayed with Top Rank. It's like, I always feel that PBC is like one welterweight away from having what they have at 54, where there is like a banging 54 fight every other month. Like, if there was just one more guy, and maybe it could have been Mikey if he didn't jump to the Zone. But I truly have no clue who Pacquiao. If
it's, Mikey if it's wouldn't be competitive fight. With most of these guys.
No, I think he's too small. But at least like the Pacquiao thing, they match up from a size perspective. But I mean, he's not there anymore, so I don't know.
I think it's really obvious what would be next, and like it's too obvious that people like can't see it. It's the Thurman rematch.
Wow. But would it, and like, does Thurman's injury align with that, like, possibility?
Yeah. No, actually, I don't think so. But if Pacquiao is coming back and he's not going to fight Spence, he's not going to fight Danny, and I think you and I both agree he's not going to fight Porter. They're not interested in fighting anybody coming off a loss. The only guy who's coming off a loss that would make sense is Thurman. And you look at the injuries that Thurman had during the fight, the fact that Thurman landed a bunch of clean shots on Pacquiao and was sweeping the later part of that fight, I think is pretty, it's sellable. And remember, they don't need to do a million buys to have a successful pay-per-view. I think successful.
It's totally sellable. The first fight was like a fight of the year candidate. Keith actually said somewhere that like if he has to go into a big fight after healing, for certain guys he would do it, and I think he mentioned Pacquiao being one of those certain guys. So that makes
now, I would like to see Thurman fight Broner, but that's a whole other thing. Anyway, Jarrett Hurd also on the undercard. He'll be fighting Francisco Santana. This isn't the greatest matchup for Hurd, but I think with Hurd, what we're going to see is him really trying to implement new stuff and Jarrett Hurd trying to reinvent himself, because the Jarrett Hurd we saw last time out, that guy is going to have a short career at 154. I mean, he's going to beat a lot of guys still because he's got the size, he's got the physicality, and he's got the power. But guys who can box and be accurate and move a bit are just always going to be his foil. And not Arizona De Lara move, who's like, doesn't have his legs anymore. You know, prime Arizona De Lara carves up Jarrett Hurd with ease.
I think Jared's probably very happy right now, because that J-Rock, which I think, you know, like with or without the improvement, J-Rock can tolerate Hurd's pressure style. But now that it's Rosario, who almost lost to a pressure fighter in who was on the undercard? Not Gallimore.
Cota?
He almost lost to Cota. It was a split decision.
Yeah, if I remember he did. Correctly. I thought Rosario won cleanly, but the judge, it was close enough that I'm not going to complain.
So you throw Hurd in there with Rosario. Hurd gets the opportunity to get his belts back, and then he could fight Charlo, he could fight Lubin, or he could grant J-Rock a rematch. I mean, like, I think Hurd, as much as he probably does want the J-Rock rematch, like, it reopened the division again.
I think he would want that rematch with Julian Williams. I think it's always good to rematch a guy fairly soon after you lose to them to close that chapter of your career.
Right.
And I think he would do that. Also on the undercard, Stephen Fulton versus Arnold Kagai. You have anything you can enlighten us about Stephen Fulton?
You know, I'm still like a little new to Stephen Fulton. I think I've watched his last fight or two. So, like, I'll be looking forward to seeing what he brings to the table. I do remember he wanted Figueroa, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Call him out. But I don't see that.
Fought on his undercard. Well, on his last fight.
Maybe they'll wait, like, a year or two to make that. But, yeah, you know, I look forward to seeing a good, good impressive performance from a rising prospect.
Yeah, Fulton has actually accomplished a little more than he's given credit for. He's 25. I haven't been terribly impressed by him, but I can't lie. He has done some things. He's gotten some decent wins that he is, like, he's progressed a little further than my opinion of him is. This should be an interesting fight. I don't know if Kagai is that good. I've seen him fight one time, and I don't remember being terribly impressed by him, but I also don't remember thinking he sucked or anything like that. So, I'm not really sure what to think of him. They both have a couple of solid wins to look at this as a pretty interesting crossroads fights between two guys who are looking to be on the rise. Kagai is 27. Fulton is 25. So that's the fight. Those are the fights this weekend on Showtime. We have a pretty light weekend after what felt like weeks and weeks and weeks of like just everyone trying to schedule cards at the same time on the same days. So
yeah, I will say that, like, you never know the way boxing has been for the last like year and a half. I mean, who knows? Like, maybe Stephen Fulton, like, lays an egg and gets knocked out or something. You never know. Like, at this point, I'm kind of trying to be locked into as much as possible.
I mean, that's always a possibility. We spoke about prospects earlier. There's a couple of other interesting guys on the undercard. Patrick Harris, Lorenzo Simpson. So those are guys to keep an eye out. Keyshawn Williams, who would... I don't know, 6-0 at this point. Not much is known about him. He's like part of this, like, there's like a bunch of guys from Maryland right now who are just kicking around. You know, you have Keyshawn Williams and Patrick Harris, who are both on the undercard. You obviously have the Gary Russells and the whole gang. Lorenzo Simpson, all from that area, that Maryland, Baltimore area. So interesting little hotbed there. I wonder if Gary Russell is responsible for it. Anyway, that's it for this week. Thanks for coming on the podcast. As you mentioned earlier, we have a Patreon Sunday patreon.com/sundaypuncher. Just $1 gets you access to our chat, which I think is more than worth it given the amount of chat that goes on and the fact that it's not like boxing Twitter where it's just a bunch of dudes, you know, trying to defend guys and networks who aren't even part of the subject, which is something you criticize or you praise one thing on boxing Twitter, and you got people in your mentioning the other side. It's like, I'm not even talking about that. I'm just saying Lorenzo Simpson's a good fighter. Why do I gotta, you know, why are we dissing on the fact that he's swapping between two networks between fights? It's like not even worth talking about. So anyway, Lex, thanks for coming on. I know it's late for you over in New York, but you know, we had to link up.
Hey man, East Coast, West Coast connect always, man.
That's right. Okay. So, we will be back next week, and hopefully we find out what's next for Danny Garcia, because I feel like Danny Garcia's next fight will be signed pretty soon.
I'm in. Let's do it.
All right. Thank you for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week. We deep like 300 Spartan. Spartan shit like the 4th of July. Yeah, nigga came from the apartment. I was broke, but still had the glick on my side.